Oh, I have to press it every time I talk?
Just once. You're talking.
Okay. And then will it undo, or? All right. It is 1:02 now, actually, so we will get started. We'll call the meeting to order, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I believe the flag is over here to our right. Everyone will stand.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic.
And we'll just go around and introduce ourselves.
Yolanda Allen, Ethics Commission.
Refik Eller, Public Defender's Office.
Elizabeth Centerfit, Circuit Judge.
John Crossman, At-Large Group 2.
Carrie Stewart, Mayor's Office.
Patricia Dodson. I don't think there's anything connected here, so. Patricia Dodson on behalf of the state.
All right, thank you. Let's look at the October 14th minutes for 2016.
Move approval of the October 14th minutes.
Second. All right, any discussion, any changes, anything? No. All right, all in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those minutes are approved. And the next item is a discussion and decision on our meeting dates for the selection of the IG. And did everyone get the, yes, anticipated hiring of Inspector General? And Cheryl Steckler put these together for us, giving us a couple different options. I know we already talked about some dates. I think she was concerned a little bit about timing, having enough time once we make our selection of who we want to interview, them having enough time to gather all of the information that they need to. So looking at the two, I believe her suggestion is the second one, where we would take a little bit more time putting us a little bit later on the interviewing. Anybody have any thoughts on these?
Push back a week then, is that what I'm seeing here? It's kind of hard to flip back and forth, but...
Steve Rohan, Inspector General, Interim Inspector General. About a month, actually.
Yeah.
And the dates the person, Ms. Beckler, was not completely familiar with the council procedure. It would be in the second one, timeline two, May 8th would be council approval, and then the Inspector General would come to work before that, unless, of course, you named the new Inspector General and interim. Begin immediately with that, up to you. The first one is after city council would finish April 10th. So it's virtually a full month, but you can see the difference is giving March 3rd to March 23rd that week time to prepare and give people travel plans to get here.
And the list of the interview dates, of course, we'll pick one of those. So what about, Mr. Rohan, the approval from the committees, are those dates correct?
They're off by about a week. If you look, which one would you like to look at?
Well, why don't we start with the April 10th?
Okay.
Ending April 10th.
But there's not much difference. If the committee completed its action by March 7th, the first reading in front of City Council would be March 14th. And then the following week is a committee, where nothing happens, first reading. Then on March 28th, you'd have second reading. And then the committees would act in the week of April 3rd. And then the council would act April 10th if everything went smoothly.
We, I believe, discussed in the October meeting, March, doing the interviews March 10th. So our interviews.
Madam Chair, just a quick question. What is this note here on both timelines 1 and 2? New IG committee needs to decide on date. So are you saying that everything below that notation on the schedules is something that's going to be decided by a different committee?
No, I think you're meeting today. I'm not quite sure why she said new IG committee. Certainly once, anytime you meet, and certainly after you meet after January, the representative of the state attorney and the public defender's office will likely be there. Not necessarily, but likely. But and any meeting you have, whoever.
Is there any reason why we need to commit to what's below that notation today, and as much as nothing's going to happen until after this committee screens the applicants down?
No. You can be as flexible as you choose to be. You can meet after January 1st or decide that now. I think the chair wanted to know what your wishes were.
Okay. Let's say we adopt timeline 2.
Okay.
Let's say we adopt everything above the notation about the new IG committee. On March 2nd, we're not going to know whether we're going to have schedule any interviews until March 2nd anyway, right?
Well, you will. Yes, on March 2nd, you will probably need to set the precise dates for the interviews. Depend on how many people you
have. Yeah, well, my recommendation would be we adopt the second timeline above the notation about the new IG committee, which would be a schedule through March 3rd, and then at some later meeting, we figure out the rest of these dates down below, because, I mean, that's a long way off.
Let me say, not for me. I'm already scheduling into next year, so I would like for us to, and I realize, but I'd like for us to go ahead and get our interview date, because that we all need to know. Some of these other dates, other people are doing and have some time. But I would like for us to go ahead and pick the date we want to do the interviews. One of the other things we've talked about doing is putting that in our advertisement, the date that we anticipate doing interviews,
right,
so that our interviewees can also be trying to make arrangements, make plans, mark that day or a couple of days off their calendar. So I'm in particular would like for us to maybe pick the date we want to interview.
It would be helpful for me as well. And I was just about to remind our team that part of the reason that we decided to do that was based upon the applicant that we'd had that contacted you after the fact, Mr. Crescent-Binia. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but at least if they know ahead of time, then they can plan to be here, know what's coming.
I agree. I think timeline 2 is good.
Mm-hmm.
I would propose we try to do the interviews either March 23rd or 24th. That's a Thursday or a Friday.
I like the timeline too, and I think it's important that we, even if we have to end up changing it, to put that date out there as much for the candidates as for everybody's schedules. And in this way, we make sure we're not going to be having meetings on committee days of the city council. I mean, We could always change it, but I don't think it hurts anything to
have a plan.
Have a plan.
I'm sorry, so the chair is proposing just meeting two of these 4 days and just advertising two of the 4 days?
Sure, we could do that. We could.
Tuesday, the 28th, would be almost impossible for me. That's a council meeting day. The 27th would be questionable. And then who knows what Ms. Boyer is going to have for us to do on Thursday, March 23rd and 24th at this early day. So, I mean, if I can get here, I'll get here. But the 28th, I know, is a council meeting day.
Are Thursdays and Fridays more likely to be better or no?
More likely, probably, yes.
What if we reserve Thursday and Friday and then into next year, we'll try to pick one of those, but we could all mark our calendars for the 23rd and 24th and try to be available.
That works. So do you want a motion on adopting timeline 2 with the interview dates of Thursday, March 23rd and 24th, deleting the rest, the other two interview dates? And
sounds good
all
to
right,
me.
So moved.
Any further discussion? Right. All in favor of adopting timeline 2, please say aye.
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 And Madam Chair?
Yes.
When you will rewrite this to reflect that, and I will put in the actual council dates and first readings.
Perfect. Anyone have anything else then on agenda item 2? So we are at the discussion on whether or not we want to amend the committee's meeting notice requirement. For some reason before, and very honestly, I don't really remember this exactly, but Mr. Rohan was reminding me, for some reason we had required 2 weeks' notice. I don't think we have to give that much public notice. And Mr. Rohan was suggesting that we shorten that to give ourselves a little more flexibility. And I think he's given us an amendment here. Mr. Rohan, you want to speak to this?
That's correct. We, in trying to set these meetings, we get sometimes a little bit late notice and after everything's been reviewed or decided upon. And sometimes, for instance, during this interview process or whatever, you may need to set a meeting less than the two weeks. Now this, we were alerted, I was alerted, not everybody knows about these directives, but there are 3 directives that were created by the committee when the committee was created. And on the second page, you'll see the item E, meeting shall be publicly noticed and paren 2 weeks in advance. Of course, the law requires at least 24 hours, and I've proposed some language for you, which you're free to amend, certainly. But the language that I proposed starts out with the legal language, notice shall be posted a reasonable time prior to the meeting, and adds a little puff language in there, which is accurate, that considering people's opportunity, the council, the committee members and the staff and the public to attend. Then I put in the aspirational advance notice is that same 2 weeks. So we will try to always give a minimum of 2 weeks notice, but it recognizes that circumstances may merit less advance notice, but not less than 24 hours notice. So we're really not changing 2 weeks. We're just making it non-mandatory so that you don't have to file. Nobody has to make a motion to waive the rule. Your rule now gives you a lot of flexibility.
Any discussion on that?
I find it acceptable. Would you like a motion? I move that we that the committee adopt the recommended change to that section E.
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? All in favor of adopting the new, the proposed language underlined here? Say aye.
Aye.
All right, and that is approved. We've got agenda item four. It's time for the Inspector General to give the six-month report to this committee. So, Mr. Rohan, you're up again.
Thank you. Thank my hardworking staff for putting together the numbers and figures that support this report. The report also is required by your directive. It's not City Council. It's actually in the directive ordinarily would have it done after we speak to City Council. But I think it's been historically determined that it's best to have the committee hear it first, and then any changes or adjustments that might be might improve it would go to the City Council when we present to them. I did away with all the bells and whistles, the pie charts, and all that. Print was too hard to read, and it's too hard to look back and forth to the pie chart. So this is rather simple in form, but I think we get our message across. General overview, the number one thing and the primary thing is a change in direction in terms of philosophy. The prior Inspector General sort of believed that we should grow the office as rapidly as possible, and then the work would come to us. And certainly the work has been coming, but the getting the results out, I've discovered whether it's the auditor's office or other inspector general's office, reports don't come out in a month. Reports don't come out in 2 months. It's an enormous amount of work to get an audit out or an investigation completed, and so the reports come later. So the philosophy's changed, so let's demonstrate results and demonstrate the workload, and then we'll talk to the council and about increasing the office any further. We're up to 9 members. Still haven't hired the administrative assistant yet or the investigator. We're in the process. We start interviewing this week for the administrative assistant and working on the investigator also. We've gone through employee services on that. And you can see the nature of our office at this time. We were successful this six-month period in working with the council, working with the mayor's office, and the independent agencies in getting additional funding for both the Inspector General's office and the Ethics Office of Compliance. And that was very good from the independent agencies. We're going to measure how much work we do for them and take a look at it in 2 years and see what the appropriate amount of contribution is. But they were very supportive of our government, supportive of our office, and we certainly do appreciate that. We also, with JEA, developed more or less of a prototype for an agreement as to protocol between the independent agency and the Inspector General's office. What matters we'll expect to audit, who's going to be in charge of investigations, what role the independent agencies will take in the investigations, and this was very cooperative and easy negotiations that led to a fairly prompt agreement with only changing words here and there. So we have a wonderful relationship with the JEA. They know that won't keep us from investigating them if we have complaints, and we hope that that will work with all the other independent agencies also. And the next thing, with all the bureaucracy that we've had to deal with, the administrative matters that we've had to deal with in terms of budget, ordinances, and various other things, our office needs to get busy on outreach. Outreach is very, very important, although I will say we're plenty busy right now. If we didn't get any more cases, we'd still be very, very busy. But you don't run an Inspector General's office without outreach, and so we plan to develop a plan to meet with the employees, with the managers, and with the independent agencies, as well as the public, as to just what the Inspector General's office can do for them and for the public and for public trust. So we plan on doing that. As you'll see on page 2, we've received 42 complaints in our office. They call them correspondences. That's Inspector General world language. But we normal people call them complaints, and that's That's what I call them. And various kinds, simple, handled and closed, matters that don't require much work at all, corrective action memorandums, management referrals, where we ask the management, the mayor's office or an independent agency to look into it themselves and report back. Management inquiries, and we have currently, from this current six-month period, the investigation unit has 16 complaints that they're working on. Audit had six, and non-jurisdictional referrals, which means that matters that go to the state attorney's office or go to various federal law enforcement agencies or state law enforcement agencies, five. So we've been very busy. Pleased to say we got seven reports out this six-month period. We've identified official misconduct, grand theft from a traffic engineering employee, and I think the word's getting out to other employees that this type of conduct will not be tolerated. We've received just tremendous support from the mayor's office in terms of the seriousness of these things, and really, instead of a feeling that we're picking on them or prodding them, it's great. You know, we need to know about this. The employees need to know that it's unacceptable. And so we've had excellent reaction from the mayor's office on that. Also from solid waste, overtime fraud. Invariably, when you, no matter what the problem is, whether it's theft or overtime fraud or something like that, invariably, there's a policy in place that's not working or needs to be improved. And so we've made an awful lot of recommendations for policy changes, and virtually every one of them have been approved by the mayor's office and the various departments that are working with us. So we're very pleased with that. We solved the great mystery of the missing credit gift cards. And very pleased with that. Sounded like Keystone Cops in that one.
Can I ask a question about that one?
Sure.
Sure. I mean, I think, Mr. Rohan, are you okay answering questions
Absolutely.
During your report, or would
sure.
you rather wait
no.
till then? Okay,
sure.
Yeah.
I read the report on the not missing gift cards, and I was kind of fuzzy on the timeline, so when did the IG get involved with that matter?
Okay. The...
Because I think it came to the public's attention probably late summer of 2015.
Lisa, who handled that? I should know by heart, but freezing up. Lisa Green.
Lisa Green. I did see the article in the paper, and I then inquired over with Ms. Russell, asked them what they were going to do about it, and it was then within a day or two that the administration did ask us to open an investigation. That was right around the fall. I want to say it was either late October, early November when that occurred. I think it's October.
So did you initiate the investigation immediately after the request for the same, or was there a lag time?
We did. Mm-hmm. What they had already done, the administration already had done an inventory of cards that they believe were in the safe. So we went over to verify the count, and it was during that period of time, which was within a week of all of this going on, that we were over there. We confirmed the amount was just, they had the right amount of cards, just the wrong math error. And then we proceeded to discuss it with the state's attorney's office, who then took over the case. And we waited at such time earlier this year. I said, I need it back. I need to get this done. And so then I immediately requested that we do a full inventory of the safe. And that is where we found the cards.
So are you saying you did not do an inventory of the safe when the complaint was originally forwarded to the office?
No, there was no reason for me to do that, because when the administration provided the cards to me, they said this is everything that they had received from their safe. And, you know, at that time, I went with what they did, and we went along according to plan.
In hindsight, should we have probably, if the office was going to take over the investigation, should you think, if you had it to do over again, you had to do an inventory of the safe?
If I had known that there had never been an inventory, there was no policies from the very beginning, yes, I would have done it. I had no reason to believe there wasn't a policy in place. I've never worked anywhere. I did not ask, but I did not believe there was, should have been a policy for logging in, logging out what you put in. There was nothing. It was non-existent. And I also believe that Ms. Russell and Ms. Mangold had gotten what they needed out of that safe.
You think the cards left the safe and somehow got back in there?
No, sir. I have a picture on the day that we went to do the original inquiry, because when they opened the safe and gave me the cards that had been inventoried, mm-hmm. I took a picture before we moved them out, and the picture of the box of the 127 is in there. They've been in there the entire time.
Okay. Because when that report was released, I did get a little bit of feedback from the general public about why wouldn't they just look in the safe on day one. So I just wasn't able to answer that question.
And I think that's a
not reason. Sure I can give them the answer, but you're saying if we had to do over again, we'd have looked in the safe on day one.
Now that I've been with the city almost 2 years, I'm going to do everything the way I would do it normally, and I'm not going to account on someone providing something to me thinking that they've done the thorough job, because there's too many policies and procedures that are not in place.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We issued 4 reports on accredited college degrees or non-accredited college degrees. Interesting on these that the administration has taken it extremely serious. So it's, you know, these are not million-dollar, multi-million-dollar cases. But when it comes to other employees missing out on promotional rights and appointment rights and whether somebody's misrepresenting something to the city, it's very important. We're pleased that whistleblowers were there to raise this issue. There was sort of a difficult culture in that department, and it seemed to be a trendy thing to do. And we're glad that we could put a stop to that, and I think put a stop to it in a big way. The administration turned down one person for a job, demoted others, and is proceeding on very rigorous discipline on yet the others. So this has been taken very seriously, and today I was advised that the administration is moving forward with legislation to clarify that it has to be accredited college or universities to get those promotions or the hirings, and they're proceeding with that, and it should be filed in the coming week. So we're very pleased that worked out well for the city in terms of letting people know that this type of conduct's unacceptable and straightening things out.
It appears that the first one on your report here and the last one are similar. Am I reading that correctly, that someone was appointed to a position without meeting the ordinance requirement for a bachelor's degree?
Yes. Well, the first one was somebody was appointed, and that appointment was withdrawn. And actually, this person had received a previous appointment and had been confirmed.
Both of those were people that were in positions that required a bachelor's degree, is that right?
Yes.
Was this just a failure to fact check and verify? I saw a lot of commercials recently that said that.
Yes.
Fact check and verify the
yes.
integrity of what they were alleging?
Yes.
Or was it a case of where they submitted something that wasn't, I mean, we don't ask for a copy of their transcript or a diploma. Was it just simply they listed something that wasn't accurate, or that they provided us with a false document that wasn't accurate?
Well, each case had a little bit different facts, but basically the principle, in one case, the person thought and actually city employee services or HR back then also thought that it was accredited, but nobody did a check to make sure.
Well, these aren't, I'm not talking about the ones in the middle, the accredited. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the one at the top and the bottom where they just didn't have a bachelor's degree. So the question is, did they just allege that they had a bachelor's degree on an application?
Yes,
they submit something that looked like a bachelor's degree that in fact proved to be like something that was bought off the internet or something.
I think two of them were very clear misrepresentations that were not caught. They should have been caught, but they weren't.
Do we need, does the legislative branch of our government need to advance some sort of legislative suggestion with regard to verifying the authenticity of claims about college or?
I wouldn't think so, because the administration's been very aggressive about setting in new procedures, clarifying, and having a protocol in place to verify each person who claims to be have a degree.
Okay, thank you.
So I think they're very aggressively taking that.
That person was hired off of a layoff eligibility list. And so she actually was offered the opportunity to promote, so she never submitted anything. No one followed through to check on that. That was a little bit different and unique than the first one. The first one was actually going for an appointment.
Can I also ask, when we say accredited, are we going to include, or is the administration going to include who accredits? I mean, you know, there again, it can, you know, who's doing the accrediting? Is it a legitimate?
I saw the proposed language in the proposed ordinance today that has been approved for filing to the General Counsel's office. It just says accredited. Accredited college and university, and it's my recommendation, I will make it to the council, that there be an amendment where we identify a place for a definition of exactly what an accredited is. Now, we do have a definition in the civil service rules, but a lot of these people are not, and that's the policy that employee services follows, is the civil service rules, but a lot of these people are doing it in appointed positions, and so therefore I think it's important that the council weigh in on this, and I expect that there will be an amendment to this legislation somewhere in the ordinance code identifying the definition for what is accredited college or university.
Or we could take this under advisement now and change it before it's filed.
At your pleasure.
Can,
if I may add, I am those employees are the Diane Moser, Employee Services. We've created a procedure, and we go through a clearinghouse that verifies that the degree is from an accredited institution based on the U.S. Department of Education.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Crescendetti.
I'm sorry, but what does that mean exactly? Like, I think there was an article in this week's Daily Record in the 50 years ago today column that talked about some school here getting its accreditation, JU or UNF or something, and they recognized the fact that they had to be like a member of some national organization or something, and I can't remember what the name of it was, but is this, I mean, what does the Department of Education accept as accreditation? I mean, is it, do they have to complete some kind of form with the, do they just file with the Department of Education? Do they have to meet standards and criteria set forth by the Department of Education?
And that is my understanding. They have to meet standards set forth by the Department of Education to achieve accreditation, and then they have to maintain that accreditation.
Can you follow up with an email on whether that understanding is, in fact, accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And how that works?
Absolutely.
And then if you'll look at that article, I think it was this week, it referenced some national organization or something that, maybe that was about testing or something, I don't know, but it was something about accreditation. I'll clip the article from my favorite column of the week.
It seems to me, and we're maybe getting a little bit too much into the weeds here, but it seems to me like there are a couple of organizations. I mean, they're, you know, well-known, well-accepted that accredit colleges and universities. So I would think we would want to make it clear that we want it accredited by those well-accepted national organizations.
And the U.S. Department of Education would be one of those.
Okay. Okay. Anything else on that one? Mr. Rohan, go ahead.
Well, there is an organization approved by the Department of Education. It's called the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges. And they are approved by the Department of Education to make those determination of accreditation. So that's that's what we based our report on, the failure of these people to get degrees from schools. And one or two of these cases were like 60 hours or 6 hours of coursework, some no coursework. There's evidence of diploma mills in one of these cases. That matter will be corrected, I'm quite confident. We have prepared 4 audit reports in this 6-month period. I'm very pleased with our auditor, Marty Shannon, who handled that, and dealt with fleet management controls and processes, city-owned real estate records, making sure that our records match up with our budget records. Purchase orders, we had a dispute with management, as will occur from time to time, as to which purchase orders and contracts should be closed and the money returned to the account of origin and which shouldn't. We made recommendations, and ultimately that's a management decision. And the city's Sunshine Compliance Review, which is currently reposited in our office to make that audit. And the city council, again, fared very well, as we expect they would. On the ongoing activities, on the last page, I'd say we're very busy. We have 37 ongoing investigations or preliminary reviews going on, not including items from 2017. We've already had a few come in. They show the various areas that they fall in. Our audit unit is working on several new audits. And we have a contract oversight unit, which is working on various projects to deal with bid manipulations, fraud by city employees, and mismanagement of city contracts and properties. So that's we've been very, very busy. I expect we'll be very, very busy in the next 6 months. And we'll be doing our very, very best to get reports. One of the interesting things I found out from the council auditor's office was I was looking at some of their reports, and they have 2 dates on their reports. Never noticed this before. One is the date of the presentation, and they have another date that looks like it's the date of commencement, but it's actually the date that the field work ceased and they started doing the analytical work. So like the Loblolly report, 2 years from the date the field work ceased to the date it came out. And so we looked at various other inspector general's offices. We discovered that in Broward County, where they have a staff of 18 people, including 6 investigators, they put out 7 reports in 2016, fiscal year 2016. Miami-Dade, where they have 38 employees and 11 investigators, 7 support staff to the investigators, they put out 9 reports. In Palm Beach, where they have 23 employees with 3 investigators and 3 investigative support staff, they put out 4 reports. So I think we're doing as good or better than they are. I can tell you that the work to comply with Inspector General standards, which by charter we're supposed to do and by ordinance we're supposed to do, takes an enormous amount of field work. And then the putting together of the reports I've discovered, which is a big job for me in making sure it goes out and it's presentable and accurate, is also a very big job. So I'm very pleased with the hard work of our staff. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan, for the report. Madam Chair, I just have one quick question. Mr. Ryan, I know that on that last page under A, the investigations unit, the 37 ongoing investigations, of those 9 kind of areas listed, which would you say the majority of the investigations are happening? Would it be the majority of them are employee misconduct issues? Like, I'm just interested, like, which...
I mean, since Lisa put this together,
yes, sir.
Respond to that.
Okay.
They very much all of them relate to employee misconduct.
Okay.
Into the areas that we've discussed. So it's employee misconduct related time and attendance fraud, contract problems, oversight of contract administration. In bribery and kickbacks and relationship administration contracts. So it's generally all employee misconduct. We have whether it's going to, it's either going to be at the employee level or the management level. We have all very degrees of culpability that's being alleged.
Okay, so even in looking at this list, for example, you wouldn't say necessarily that of the investigations, the majority of them would involve theft of time. Like, that seems to be prevalent amongst the employee misconduct. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, and they're all varied.
Okay.
They're all varied, and yes, we just had two recent ones.
Okay.
Similar but different, but yes. But again, it's very varied. There's it's all employee misconduct that we're getting.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Green, this list doesn't include any recent reports, right? This is all 2016. Yes.
The 37, everything that has not been completed since October 2014, everything in 2014 has been closed out. But we do have two ongoing investigations that are still doing. So this is basically the entire history of organization.
Okay, so including fiscal year 17.
17, I did not include 17.
Okay, that's what, all right. So in future reports, can you put like parentheses on here, like 2 bid rigging, 5 bribery kickbacks? Is there a reason you don't want to do that?
Because they're ongoing investigations. Some of these things, this is a mix of some things that are actually ongoing and additional items that are being reviewed.
Okay, so the audits, you can do that, but you'd prefer not to do it on the investigations?
I prefer not to do it in a six-month report when we issue something.
Well, you're doing it on the audits on the next paragraph, so tell me what the difference would be.
The audits aren't subject to the same confidentiality as an investigation, and until the issues are resolved, we don't like to discuss the number related to specific items.
Thank you.
Anything
else on the
6-month
report?
Oh, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
For your
appreciate your help. Appreciate it so much.
I agree. Public defender's in the same position, and I am actually meeting with public defender elect this Friday, so I can transmit that information to him.
Okay. Well, we're sorry to lose you guys, but since it may change, thank you. Can I just throw out there a possible date, January 19th? It's a Thursday. Old school in it here. I got a hard calendar.
I'm right there with you, Judge.
January 19th at 1 o'clock? Sound okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Then let's go ahead. If you guys will mark that down and... We'll have to do the notice and everything, and we've probably got a little bit of time, but that way people can mark it off. All right. Then we are down to comments from the public. Are there, we have anyone? Yellow cards? No? All right. Anybody have anything else before we adjourn?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.